Thank Brother Robert for his prayer on our behalf, as well as you. We're praying for the one who would bring the message this morning. The title of the message is Surviving the Storms. There was a film, movie, whatever you want to call it, made some time ago with an unusual storyline. A man was given a special pair of sunglasses by a mysterious stranger. The sunglasses allowed the man wearing them to be able to see a caption about every person whom he was looking at. Therefore, he was able to see beyond a person's cover or perhaps their smile and see the issues and problems that were lying beneath. Now, if this was possible, what caption or captions would a person see about us? Consider some possibilities, such as these: lonely, health problems, afraid of fill in the blank, struggling with sin, bitter, unforgiving, unforgiven, lost, struggling with doubt, in need of some hope, deceived, depressed, struggling with failure, afraid to fail. That's just some. That may be captions that would be showing above our faces. There's a misconception concerning the church in that it should be full of perfect people. The fact that the church is made up of people means it will not be perfect. Because people have problems and people have issues. Did you notice that? Paul knew this, so when writing to the Galatian church, he said in Galatians 6, first two verses, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself." Why? And I paraphrase here, because you are not above them, you also may be tempted in a similar way. And he went on to say, "Bear ye one another's burdens or weights or loads or problems, and so fulfill the law of Christ." The statement is certainly true that if you or if I find a perfect church, we better not join it because that will ruin it. Point being that there is no such a thing. Robert Weber tells of a conversation that he had on an airplane traveling from San Francisco to Los Angeles. He said, "I was sitting next to the window reading a Christian book. The man next to me, obviously from the Eastern Hemisphere, asked, 'Are you a religious man?' 'Well, yes,' I said. 'I am too,' he responded. We began talking about religion. And in the middle of the conversation, I asked, 'Can you give me a one-liner that captures the essence of your faith?' 'Well, yes,' he said. 'We are all part of the problem, and we are all part of the solution.'" Weber goes on to say that we talked about his one-liner, a statement that he felt was very helpful. And after a while, I said, "Would you like a one-liner that captures the Christian faith?" "Sure," he responded. And here's what he told him: "We are all part of the problem, but there is only one man who is the solution, Jesus Christ." Do too many people in the church have problems? We all have some. This is not an excuse to sin or not to deal with sin. The point is this. With people, there will be problems, and problems are precisely one of the reasons why we need to be in the church. Because the head of the church, Jesus, has the solutions. I don't have all the answers, but I can point you to one who does. You and I cannot change our own heart apart from the grace of God. He really can change it. We can't change our own heart. We can't change someone else's heart. However, we can make conscious choices that align with the principles of God's word that will bring solutions. Now, all of the possible captions that I mentioned a little bit ago are problems that may or may not exist in our church, in this church. They may be problems we have, or there may be other possibilities that I didn't mention. But I don't believe that I'm reaching too far in saying that we could also call them storms in our lives. When we think of storms in our lives, we think of tough times, don't we? Tough times. The things or the problems that I mentioned, they are tough times. It's tough to struggle with sin. It's tough to struggle with doubts. It's tough to be lonely or depressed. How can we survive these storms? There can be many different types of storms we deal with in our lives. A storm to you may not be a storm to me, and vice versa. Billy Graham wondered if he missed a golden opportunity to witness the President John Kennedy following the 1963 National Prayer Breakfast. You see, Kennedy eagerly wanted to talk to Graham and invited him to the White House. But Graham was fighting a fever and not feeling well, and he asked if they could talk some other time. President Kennedy understood, but Graham sadly acknowledged that it was the last time that he was with the president due to him being assassinated. Graham realized that the opportunity to talk to President Kennedy was an irrecoverable moment. How many of us are dealing with the storm of carrying baggage in our lives because of irrecoverable moments or lost opportunities? How can we survive these storms? Does God really want us to carry baggage the rest of our life? How can we survive our problems? You know, I believe a storm, maybe you don't think this, but I believe a storm can be as small as getting through a difficult day. How do we survive? Well, first of all, I believe we need to look honestly concerning where we're at. We may be where we're at or facing what we are as a result of someone else. We may be there as a result of ourselves. Or it may not really be a result of anyone in particular. And at any rate, the key that I believe, the thing that is the key is that we need to take an active responsibility for ourselves, for myself. We need to stop blaming and take the responsibility for me. I believe Peter says it well through the inspiration of the Spirit in 1 Peter 5, verses 5 and 6. He says, "Be clothed with humility, for God resisteth or opposes the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time." We need to humbly confess, I've got a need.
I need some external help. Whether that need is forgiveness of sin or strength or help or all three, I need to humbly confess my need. We need an honest evaluation of ourselves, not someone else who we may think is causing our storm, but ourself. An honest evaluation about me. That's a start. Then secondly, I believe we need to learn what Hagar learned. You may want to turn back to Genesis 16. Abraham's wife, Sarah, suggested that Abraham take Hagar to be a wife in order to bear children, since Sarah did not have any children. And Abraham took her advice, and he took Hagar for a wife, and sure enough, she conceived. However, things didn't quite work out the way Sarah thought they were, and it caused problems between Sarah and Hagar, and Sarah ended up treating Hagar cruelly, roughly, so badly that Hagar fled. And I want to pick up there in chapter 16 at verse 7, when it says, "And the angel of the Lord found her," meaning found Hagar, "by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. And he said, 'Hagar, Sarah's maiden, whence camest thou? And whither wilt thou go?' And she said, 'I flee from the face of my mistress Sarah.' And the angel of the Lord said unto her, 'Return to thy mistress, and submit thyself under her hands.' And the angel of the Lord said unto her, 'I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude.' And the angel of the Lord said unto her, 'Behold, thou art with child, and shalt bear a son, and shalt call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction, and he will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren.'" Catch verse 15. "And she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, 'Thou, God, seest me.' For she said, 'Have I also here looked after him that seeth me?'" The New King James reads this way of verse 13. "Then she called to the name of the Lord who spoke to her, 'You are the God who sees.'" The God who sees. "For she said, 'Have I also seen him who sees me?'" Hagar had learned that God saw her, was interested in her situation after being so cruelly treated by Sarah, and flee. She was amazed that here was God. And she became the focus of his attention. "You are the God who sees me." I believe we need to learn that whatever the storm is we're dealing with, we are the focus of God's gracious attention. I can't explain that George can be the focus of God's attention, and I'm the focus of God's attention, and you are the focus of God's attention all simultaneously. That's a great God. But he is the God who sees. You know, there's days that I just kind of dread sometimes, and I think about them and I dread them all the more. Try to remember this. You're the God who sees. I'm the focus of your attention. I'll take it a step at a time through this day. You know, he told Hagar there, he said, "I know your situation." He even told her what would be the end of it. He knew all about it. He knows all about our situations. He knows the end of them, and he knows how to get us to the end. He is the God who sees. Thirdly, we need to learn what the disciples learned here in Mark. You know, we know that Hurricanes have at the center of them an area that's called the eye, E-Y-E, like our eyes that we see with. And the eye is roughly a circular area within the storm, around the center of the storm, that is relatively calm in comparison to the rest of the storm. In fact, there can even be clear skies in that eye. And it's interesting, as I did a little checking on this, that the area next to the eye of the storm is called the eye wall. And it's within that area that's the second most severe weather occurs. So you have that right next to the eye. With that in mind, consider the disciples' plight that evening on the Sea of Galilee in the midst of that storm. Let me get back to Mark 48. It says that Jesus saw them toiling in their rowing, for the wind was contrary unto them. They were straining to try to control the boat and get to the other side on their own efforts. They were straining, they were toiling. And how often do we try to weather the storms of our life, whether they're small or big, on our own strength, where we're just straining and toiling. If I can just do this, I'll get through. And Jesus, or God, is standing back, watching, as Jesus was here. Carol and I are good friends of them. We know of them, talk to them occasionally. I suppose they're probably in their late 60s, maybe early 70s. I'm not exactly sure. But about 9 years ago, this time of year, they lost a daughter, son-in-law, and a grandchild in a helicopter accident in Hawaii. Along with that, they've also lost their oldest daughter to cancer. As far as we know, they are not believers. And we wondered, how do you survive something like that without the Lord? Trying to do it on our own strength. Well, here are the disciples trying to get across the Sea of Galilee, trying to get through the storm, and Jesus walks on the sea to get out to where they are. Verse 49 says, "But when they saw him walking upon the sea, they supposed it had been a spirit, and cried out. For they saw him and were troubled, and immediately he talked with them and saith unto them, Be of good cheer. It is I. It is I. Be not afraid. And he went up unto them into the ship, and the wind ceased." Now take what we were just talking about, the eye of a storm, the E-Y-E. And when Jesus was there with the disciples, the wind ceased, there became a calm, the presence of Jesus was like the eye of a storm. Only it would not be spelled with E-Y-E, but it would be spelled with a capital I. He said, "It is I." He was really saying, "It is I, the great I am, the self-existent God. I don't need anybody, I don't depend on anyone. I'm here." Be not afraid. That night on the Sea of Galilee, Jesus became the I, capital I, of the disciples' storm. And the third point in surviving the storms of our lives is this, that Jesus needs to be the I, capital I, of our storms. From the little ones to the big ones. Someone took that thought and they put it in the words, and I think it just has a powerful message to it. They didn't understand why he wouldn't come as they made their way toward the other side. As they left the shore, they faced the storm, and suddenly they feared for their lives. But upon the sea, there someone walked on the water as they listened for his cry. That's when they heard him call their names, and tenderly he said, "It is I." He's the eye of the storm, capital I, the center of my calm, the place where I find shelter, the place where I find warmth, the center of my ways. That's why even the small, little storms of even a difficult day can be a storm. He can be the center of that day. He's the eye of it, the keeper of my days. When I can't feel the sunshine and my ship is tossed and torn, he's the eye of the storm. They couldn't understand how the Prince of Peace could find them in the middle of their sea. But with little faith and God's good grace, joy would overcome their disbelief. Now there are times in life when I face the storm and I wonder if I ever will survive. That's when I hear him call out my name, and tenderly he says, "It is I." He's the I, capital I, of my storm, the center of my calm, the place where I find shelter, the place where I find warmth, the center of my ways, the keeper of my days. When I can't feel the sunshine and when my ship is tossed and torn, he's the eye of the storm. Do not fear when he is near. Take hold of his strong hands. Listen closely to his words. He's the great I am. He's the eye of my storm. You see, the difference between believers and unbelievers is not that one has problems and the other doesn't. Both have problems. The difference is who is the eye of their storms. If there's a difference between one believer and another believer, it's not that one has problems and the other doesn't. Both have problems. The difference, again, may be that who is the eye of the storm? Because you see, it's the eye of the storm, capital I, that brings results. Different results, whoever that eye is. Jesus wants to be the eye of all of our storms. Whether it's a storm of irrecoverable moments, missed opportunities, we don't really have to carry all that baggage. Sometimes I wonder if we think, well, this is my punishment. I got to carry this baggage the rest of my life, and I'll look better in front of other believers if I just carry this baggage. We don't have to carry it. We can throw it down at his feet because he can be the eye of that storm. He wants to be. Whether it's a storm of dealing with problems in relationships, Jesus wants to be the eye of that storm. He wants to be the center of our ways, the keeper of our days. Again, the place where I find shelter, the center of our calm. And that's really all we need sometimes, a place to go that's calm. Where I can say it at this point of the day, Lord, you know, you are the God that sees me. You know what's going on. You know what I'm dreading. You know what I'm facing. But you're a calm spot I can come to. I can take hold of his strong hand to help survive the storms. Someone has said, and I quote, "When we are consumed with God, Jesus," whichever name you want to put in there, for God, the only God. "When we are consumed with God, or God's sufficiency,
we grow indifferent to the obstacles facing us. Now think about that. When we're consumed with the sufficiency of God or of Christ at the eye of our storms, the obstacles no longer seem so big or so much of an issue. It's interesting to me that Jesus will not force his way into being in the eye of our storms. Like the disciples, he will let us struggle if we choose. He'll let us struggle. But John's parallel account of this event says that the disciples, when they realized who it was, willingly received Jesus into the ship. I would say that it is our choice whether we are going to make Jesus the eye of every one of our storms, capital I. It's our choice. He won't force his way. We choose. To survive the storms of life, we need to look honestly concerning where we're at. We need to remember that God is the God who sees me. He sees you. He knows all about it. He knows the end. He knows how to get you there. And we need to make Jesus the I, capital I, of every storm. When Walter Winchell, the famous World War II radio commentator, heard that the port of Senegal had fallen under enemy control, he closed his broadcast by saying this: Singapore has fallen, but the Rock of Ages stands. Wow. What a closing. Love to hear that today on the radio. That's our hope and our confidence in surviving any storm of life. It may seem like the world's fallen, but our Savior, the Rock of Ages, still stands, doesn't he? And he intercedes, or he's willing to intercede. He's just waiting for our invitation. Come get in my boat. Get in my boat.